This is an oral history interview of Mr. Irwin Simon. The date is June 20th, 2007. The interviewer is Judith Christie. We are in Mr. Simon's home in Huntington Woods, Michigan. Good morning, Mr. Simon.
Good morning, Julie. I'm very glad to be here.
Thank you. Well, before we start, I'd like to get this on the record. You've agreed to do these interviews for an oral history project under the auspices of the Michigan Supreme Court Historical Society. The interview will be transcribed and given to you for editing. You may make any additions, corrections, or deletions to the material that you wish. You'll be asked to sign a document giving the interview tapes and transcripts to the Michigan Supreme Court Historical Society. Transcripts of the interview will be placed in the archives of the Society and will be available to the public via an internet site. Is all that acceptable to you?
It is acceptable, and I understand it.
Good. Thank you. So we'll get started. Let's talk about your parents. Where were you born, and who was your father and mother?
I was born in Lansing, Michigan, in 1913. My father was Lewis Simon, who had been born in Canada, and my mother was Minnie Kramer, who was born in Bay City. My father came to the United States as a young man, I believe around 1909, and went into business in Lansing as a manager of a foundry which made parts for the automobiles. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Lansing, a very pleasant place to grow up. Much different from managed lives of the children I see here. I always walked to school, never was given a ride. It was a very pleasant life.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters, both younger. One of them just died a couple of months ago at age 90, and the other is living in Miami Beach, enjoying life.
Good.
Yeah.
Where did you go to elementary school?
Lansing, Genesee Street School, mm-hmm. which was 9 blocks from our house. I don't think it is being used as a school anymore. Mm-hmm. From there, I went to junior high school, West Junior High School it was, and then to Lansing Central High School, which was just 3 blocks from our house.
That's nice. What were you mainly interested in high school? Did you?
I was on the debate team. I was a class officer. I tried out for the swimming team, but they discontinued the event that I was good at, so I didn't continue.
Any other sports that you were on?
No organized sports, yes.
The debate team sounds like you were interested in.
Oh, often. Yes, yes. For a number of years, I can remember. One year, the subject was whether chain stores should be prohibited.
Which side did you take?
Well, we were required to debate both sides. It's rather amusing now that even there was an idea that you could do something like that.
Very true. So after high school, you went on to college.
I went to the University of Michigan, scholarship, worked for my board. I had a good time. I fell in love every spring and out by fall. Well,
that sounds wonderful. Absolutely perfect. What made you choose University of Michigan?
No, I had, ever since the, I'd always planned to be an attorney. I'm not sure why, but in the eighth grade occupations course, I wrote my report on, I would be an attorney. And that's what I intended to do, and I did. The only law school at that time that was available was in Ann Arbor, so I had planned to take a combined course, 3 years literary school and 3 years law, and I could do that if I had started at Ann Arbor, yes.
So that was part of your whole life plan. Made it in the eighth grade.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Well, I think I had an aptitude, which I was aware of.
Mm-hmm. Was there any family member in the law?
No. No, I was the first.
What interested you most when you got to law school?
I was interested in everything. I took the, all the way through the university, I took the beginning course in everything. And I was on the law review, but I think my notes that I wrote were rather routine. And as I look back at them, I don't think there was anything very I don't think I developed anything. I just routine comments. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed discussions. And it was a good place to think and I didn't get involved in politics, although I guess I was part of the 1930s very liberal approach, which I have since recovered from.
How did the Depression affect your family?
No money.
You had no money.
No money. I had money enough for to pay room at the law club, but I always worked for my board. It wasn't an easy time, but I had a good time. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. Just when people went out for a milkshake in the evening, I just didn't go, which was all right. I didn't care much for milkshakes.
Well, you probably weren't the only one affected by the Depression anyway.
Oh, so. No. I don't think people realize today the dislocations created in the 30s, and it affected me very much. When I graduated from law school in 37, I went to New York, I went to Chicago, I went to all around Detroit looking for a clerkship in a law firm. Nothing. Every place told me to go home.
Really?
Yes. I mean, they're very nice. They talked to me and eventually came out, go home. So my clerkship, which is really the impetus for this narration, came by necessity and not from desire. In fact, I remember telling someone when I first heard about applying for a Supreme Court clerkship, I want to practice law. I don't want to do more research. But I was wrong.
Well, to go back to your job search, I recall that you mentioned in the excerpt you'd given me of your writings that you also felt there was perhaps an anti-Semitism ingredient in that, or was that less important? Is that
No. There just weren't any positions. 1937 was the depth of the Depression. There'd been a slight recovery around 35, and then really the bottom dropped out in 37. And it wasn't until 39 and 40 when the war industries and things, the economic activity started to pick up again.
Yeah. You said you weren't particularly interested in politics.
I was a class officer and that sort of thing, but I was interested in politics. I voted as soon as I could, and I must have voted. Oh, I know what I did. The Literary Digest had a poll in 1936, I think it was, and showed the Republicans winning big, but they, in publishing their statistics, they showed how the people whose vote they took had voted in 32. And all you had to do was look at those figures and see that they were only contacting people who had voted Democratic. So the vote was skewed, but they did tell the numbers. So I took the 32 statistics, each state, how they voted. I reweighted the Literary Digest poll figures and came out almost exactly as the 36 election went. So I started taking bets, which of course was illegal, I believe, betting on the election. Not big bets, but I'd give all kinds of odds that the Democrats wouldn't take more than five states. Actually, they only took two in the 36 election. So I did very nicely. That was my interest in politics.
But you indicated you were a liberal at that time.
I mean, yes, I was very much a person of the day.
So then you got wind of the clerkship. How did that happen?
As I said, I went to New York, I went to Chicago, I went around Detroit. No opportunities. I knew Joe Jack here, who was then Henry Butzel's clerk, and he said, come talk to the judge and see about the clerkship. So I did. And he hired me for the coming year. He would have a different clerk each year. It was the luckiest thing that ever happened to me.
Let me ask you about the clerkship itself. Now that was not, that was paid for by the judge himself, or was it paid for by the judge? All right, we took a pause there for a few minutes while the background noise was loud. Mr. Simon, we were talking about how the clerkships for the Supreme Court justices were done at the time that you became one.
I have to go back to Judge Butzel's appointment in 1929. He was a prominent attorney here in Detroit and involved in community affairs and all of that. And when Justice Fellows died, Governor Green appointed Henry Butzel to the vacancy. Butzel, this was the summer of 1929, Butzel happened to be summering on Cape Cod with his family. So when I think he accepted the appointment, but he knew that Justice Brandeis of the United States Supreme Court was summering just a short distance down the coast. So he called Brandeis and asked if he told him he had been appointed and could he come and talk to him. Brandeis very nicely agreed, and asked Brandeis, did he have any advice for him? Brandeis says, yes, two things. Do you own corporate stocks? Butzel said, yes. Brandeis says, sell it all because you'll have constant conflicts. Butzel said, I can't. The salary of the Michigan Supreme Court judge at that time, I think, was $7,000 a year. And Butzel said, I can't. He says, well, do you own bank stocks? And he said, yes. He says, well, that's the biggest source of litigation and conflict. He said, all right. So in the summer of 1929, Butzel sold all his bank stocks, which was number one, very fortunate. Number two, Brandeis said, do they provide clerks, research clerks for you? Butzel said, no. Brandeis says, can you afford to employ one yourself? He said, Butzel said, yes. Brandeis says, by all means, do it. They are of invaluable assistance. So Judge Butzel immediately employed a clerk, and each year thereafter hired a clerk on his own. I think I am the oldest surviving clerk. All my predecessors are gone. I Judge Butzel employed me in 1937. Up to that time, he had employed and paid the clerk out of his own funds. But he kept pushing for a formal appointment of a research clerk for each judge. Finally, the year I was employed was the year that every judge got a clerk. Salary, $125 a month.
Wow.
That
was good.
That was all right in those days. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have a car or anything, but I knew all of the clerks. I eventually got acquainted with all the clerks up to my time and some of them after. It was a wonderful relationship because of Judge Butzel's nature and character.
Tell me about your interview with him. How did he come over? How did he appear to you? Can you recall those?
He's a very, physically a very impressive man. His manner was strong. He was not wishy-washy in any respect. He was very direct and I really don't remember much about the interview.
Did you have to show your writing skills to him? Did you?
No, I, as I say, I knew Joe Jackie, who was then clerk, who probably had told him something about me, because I had no delay in being accepted for the position, which was very good because I needed the employee. But this was the luckiest thing that ever happened to me. I think I would have been very unhappy in New York. I know what it was like as a neophyte attorney. I really was rather naive in many respects, not in terms of legal issues or questions or that sort of thing, but in business relationships and all of that. I had a lot to learn. Judge Butzel was very knowledgeable in business matters. He was a director of what later became Detroit Bank. Mm-hmm. He was also a director of other things. He was president of community organizations and so on. It was a wonderful relationship. He had the capability of listening. And here I was, I use the word a little snot nose.
Yeah.
I could just imagine what my clothes must have been like. and he would give me a chance to talk. The procedure was that the judges were assigned cases in rotation, mm-hmm. and the briefs and records would be given to the judge on the cases of sound. Well, he'd get all the briefs and records for all the cases, but also he would give me the briefs and records of the cases that were assigned to him. I would read them, do an analysis. He would tell me the reaction he got from the oral argument mm-hmm. of the case in the court, how he thought it should probably go. But I was not directed to come up with a position. And sometimes I would take a position after reading the briefs and records, which was different from the one initial. And instead of just telling me to do as I was told, he would listen and we would talk. I remember one case we discussed daily for a month. And finally he said, "This is the way it's going to be," and I said, "Yes, sir."
But he gave you ample opportunity.
Oh, yes, yes.
He, explore.
Yeah, he of course, I was developing a personal relationship
yes.
with him.
We'll get to that.
Too.
How was his chambers arranged? How exactly did that work?
Every judge has had chambers in the old Capitol mm-hmm. building. That's where the court was. But he had his own office in the National Bank building in Detroit. Mm-hmm. It was a one-room office. His secretary stayed in Lansing.
Oh, his secretary was in Lansing.
Lansing, and he had his office here. And I was also located here, except that I would drive him, the judge, and Judge Bushnell up to Lansing in Judge Butzel's car for the beginning of the session, each session. That's another thing. Judge Butzel and Judge Bushnell were very different people. Bushnell was a Democrat. Butzel was a Republican. They got along very nicely with a great deal of respect and friendship. Mm-hmm. Much different than the attitudes that have been developed today. I got to know them both very well, and it was a relationship that, I mean, Butzel and Bushnell, that I respected very much.
Did they talk about cases on the way up, or did they, or back? Was it mainly
I
social?
Don't recall. I think they were both involved in public affairs generally, and had a lot of interests that common.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a nice relationship.
Yeah, it was very friendly, even though their attitudes and thinking principles were much different.
And that would be a relatively long trip, since there weren't expressways.
Lansing to Detroit could be anywhere from 2 to 3 hours or more.
Ample time to talk.
Yes, yes.
Let me just pause here on the tape. So you would go up, how often would the Lansing
I think there were four terms a year. And the hearings would last 2-3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then Judge Butzel would come back and operate out of his Detroit office.
Okay, we're back after a pause. We were talking about the organization of the court and how things worked.
The court as I knew it, each justice had a lot of autonomy. They were very independent, mm-hmm. and very different in personality. Judge Wiest was still the gentleman from way back. Judge Feed was very much a public figure. Judge Butzel was a public figure. Each judge was different. Now, you must remember, I was there only a year, mm-hmm. and I was not involved much with the other justices.
But would you call, did you have a feeling that the court was collegial, that they got along personally and professionally?
They got along, and I think there was a great deal of respect in the sense that, although I know there were fundamental disagreements, nevertheless, I was never heard of any personal animosities or difficulties. When the clerkships became a government office, there were some judges that would have nothing to do with a clerk. They didn't want a clerk, they weren't going to have anything to do it. So the poor people who had that position were just out there doing nothing. On the other hand, there were some who very much used the clerk, such as Justice Butzel, and he was really the initiator of the whole idea of mm-hmm. having a research clerk.
Did you ever mess up? Did you ever make an error that the justice had to deal with? How would he treat that sort of?
Well, whatever came out eventually was what the judge wanted. And so I don't recall ever any situation that you would call an error. In fact, it was the other way around. I a few times found serious errors in what had been submitted by counsel in their briefs. Mm. But again, that didn't enter into anything.
No, no. So, but it sounds like he was an engaged boss.
Very much so. It was his decisions. He was not a scholar. He was more of a high-level businessman. His practice had been very much business-oriented. His brother Fred, who was in the same office, handled the miscellaneous public affairs individual public affairs.
Mm-hmm. So they worked actually in the same office in the National
Bank? Oh, yes, Bank yes. And it so happened that one of his clerks also became a partner, Max Fruhoff.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. So could you characterize the court at that time? Would it have been a more liberal court or a more conservative court?
It was not a liberal court at all. In fact, I don't think it was a very good court, looking back. Yeah.
What makes you say that?
The Michigan Supreme Court has not been known in more recent years for the quality of its production and opinions and things.
Mm-hmm.
I do not characterize any of the judges as being scholars or
mm-hmm.
Or great lawyers, including Butzel.
Mm-hmm.
Great lawyer, yes, but a great scholar.
Not a Brandeis,
No.
Now, Justice Butzel was he the first Jewish justice, to your knowledge?
Yes, as far as I recall. And apropos of that, he was required to run for election
mm-hmm.
Not too many years after his appointment. I think at the end of, he served out the Justice Fellow's term, mm-hmm. and then he was required to run for election. And I was told, I do not know that there was some effort to get someone to run against him, but he had no trouble. In fact, I think the person who was solicited as an opponent actually withdrew before the election.
Do you know how Justice Butzel felt about running for office for judicial?
Well, he had not anticipated
staying.
He had an excellent practice. He had a family. He was didn't need the public recognition, but he enjoyed it very much.
That's why he stayed.
He did not stay for any economic reason, or for prestige or that sort of thing. Although he did appreciate the importance of being a Supreme Court justice.
But elections must have been sort of. Of course, they're not like they are now, but they must have been an imposition.
No, it was different. The judges didn't campaign for re-election, as far as I was aware.
So how
did you must remember, I was his clerk for one year.
1 year, right.
Although I did have
subsequent
relationships.
Do you remember any interesting cases that you worked on while you were with the justice? Anything that stands out in your mind?
No.
Okay. Well, let's get on to your social relationship, because that certainly blossomed. What happened there?
I learned later that the judge, after he'd gotten acquainted with his clerk, would have him come home for dinner. And the dinner was a fairly formal mm-hmm. Affair. and the whole family would be there. And I learned later that when they heard that the judge was bringing another clerk home for dinner, there was objection.
Oh dear.
I wasn't aware of that. And I also heard later that after dinner you were expected to go and sit with the judge in his den while he smoked a cigar and talk with him. Instead, I turned to his daughter and asked her if she'd like to go to a movie. She said yes. To cut it short, we were married 2 years later.
Was the justice surprised that you did not join him in his?
No, I never.
He didn't summon you.
Oh no.
Well, she must have taken your eye right away then, Eleanor.
She was. Was getting her master's at University of Michigan social work and had a position in St. Louis in a children's agency. So she was there for 2 years. Mm-hmm. When she came home, we were married.
So you courted during the 2 years?
Oh, yes, yeah.
We got a little more time. How did your relationship with the justice change now that you were not his clerk anymore, but you were to be his, were his son-in-law?
There was really no change in substance. I always had great respect for him. And it made no difference whether it was as a clerk or son-in-law or whatever. He was a very impressive man, and my relationship with him was based on respect first and affection second. I had a lot of affection for him. He was a man who, wonderful humor, you gotta remember, I came, from an atmosphere of respect for parents, and it just fit in. Mm-hmm. Because he later I joined him when he had the Saturday lunch with his brother Fred on Rowena. It was a very natural relationship. Mm-hmm.
You and Eleanor moved around quite a bit as you were.
Well, after we were married in 1940, in June of 1941, I went into the Army. And she came out to California where I was stationed, and although I was a recruit and couldn't get off at night, I had to be in the barracks at night. She came out and was somehow or other, I don't know how, I was able to rent a nice little terrace in La Jolla. I'm surprised that they rented to me. And Ellie came out and was there, and then I was released in September because I was 28 years old when I went into the Army. and they stopped drafting 28 years or older, and they released me, and we came home.
Now, just this is part two of an interview with Mr. Irwin Simon. Again, it's July 20th, 2007, and we're still at Mr. Simon's home in Huntington Woods. And we were talking about your Army career. You got let go when you were 28.
I came home. We bought a house in Huntington Woods. We moved in December 1st. The following Sunday, we had all our friends out to see our new home. The radio was on, and that was December 7, 1941. I was back in the Army in a couple weeks. I spent 4 years after that. I came home in January of 1946. And when I left the office, oh, by the way, I skipped here. After my clerkship, I was employed by the judge's former office as a clerk, and was involved in litigation, all sorts of practice. When I went into the Army, I was participating in an antitrust case in federal court. When I got out and back into practice in 1946, the case was still pending, and I picked up and was involved there. And incidentally, we lost the case, which we probably should have anyway. So I had no legal involvement in the Army. I was involved in security intelligence for a while, military police, nothing involving legal career.
When you did, your wife remain close to her family the whole time you were gone? Did she?
Oh, she remained in Detroit because I begat two children while I was in the Army, and she was busy with the family.
Very busy. Did she continue anything in the way of a career at that time, or did she just stay with raising the kids?
No, she did not continue with her social work then, but a few years later she did. And,
it sounded like Justice Butzel and his wife raised, at least in the case of your wife, a very independent-minded young woman.
Very independent.
What do you think was their, what kind of influence do you think that he had on his daughters?
He when he was married, he was well along in years, and I know that as younger children, he was closely involved with them, but as you just pointed out, his daughters were very independent, and his son, who became a professor at Union College in Schenectady, even more so independent.
I thought it was interesting in reading about Justice Butzel that none of his brothers ever married other than him. Is that correct?
That's Correct. His brother Lawrence lived in Manhattan and was involved in business, and then retired, spent his winters playing bridge and his summers fishing in Maine. His brother Fred was a partner. Fred was very much involved in community affairs and was practically the dean of the social work community. Mm-hmm. I don't think the professionals particularly cared for his involvement because he was very unprofessional in the terms of the way he handled things. But a lot of empathy, a lot of concern. Mm-hmm. His brother Morris died the year before I did not become acquainted with him, except that he had been a in the army in the Spanish-American War for a brief time, and when he died, he had a military funeral, and I have the flag that was on his casket, which I fly. It's a very large 48-star flag, which I fly on national holidays.
You mentioned, a couple times you mentioned Justice Butzel's sense of humor. What kind of sense of humor did he have?
Not a formal sense of humor. It was, he didn't tell jokes. But he had a very nice smile, laugh, and it was an easy, pleasant personality.
Mm-hmm. So he just saw the good side of life.
Very much so. Although he appreciated problems and was aware of them.
Mm-hmm. Did he have any influence on your later career as you went on in the law?
He did not, shall we say, interfere or become involved in my career. Mm-hmm. I guess I was very independent also. He did not interfere or become involved in.
Did he ever give you any advice? Did you ever ask for any advice from him?
Not as such. Mm-hmm. We just sort of lived together. We were, I don't mean in terms of residence, right. But I was very close to him. Mm-hmm. For instance, Saturday morning, we would go to the Eastern Market, and we would start at one end of the four-block place, and his driver, his man, would come along with a bushel basket. We would price the vegetables and things all the way down. On the way back, we would buy. It was that sort of a relationship.
Sounds delightful.
And I had lunch with him every Saturday with his brother Fred on what was then Rowena Street and now Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very close, friendly life. I except for my respect for his personality and character, it was more of a friendship relationship.
Yeah. Did you ever think of seeking a judgeship for yourself?
No. That no. Is. No, I... my 1 year as a research clerk satisfied my... No, I always was interested in practicing law, more the business aspects, mm-hmm. so banking, finance, and that sort of thing.
Did you get a chance to get involved in some of the activities, outside activities that the judge also pursued in the community?
That's interesting. Although Fred and the judge, his brother Fred and he were very much community involved. Not while he was on the bench, he did it, but Fred very much. And interestingly enough, they never pressured me.
That's nice.
To get involved, looking back. But when Fred died in 1948, Fred said, look, you've got to take a position on the board. So I did. I got started, and I wound up as president of United Community Services and vice president of the Jewish Welfare Federation, and president of the Michigan League for Human Services, which was a state organization. And then in 72, I sort of became emeritus and said I'd had enough.
But that's certainly impressive to get involved to that extent.
Yeah, well, once I decided that I would, I did.
Yeah. Well, those are good mm-hmm. memories.
To recapitulate, the luckiest thing that ever happened to me was that I did not get a position in New York, that I came back and became Judge Henry Butzel's clerk and married his daughter. Those things, yes.
Well, to even sum up a little more, what do you think, if you had to summarize Justice Butzel's legacy, mm-hmm. what would you think that would be? What would you...
I, unfortunately, I think people have forgotten. People, there aren't that many around who knew him.
Even though he was on the court for a very long time.
Yes. Time passes.
Yeah.
New people, different involvement. I'm not aware of any legacy as such.
Mm-hmm. What do you think he'd think of the Michigan Supreme Court today?
Oh, he would be very unhappy.
He would?
Oh, yes.
Why would he?
The lack of collegiality, of animosities, at least. I'm aware of reading the newspapers, but there was nothing like that.
No infighting is what you don't remember.
At least not public.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you've given a wonderful summation of your relationship, both personal and professional, yes. with Justice Butzel. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. Memories that are good, I should retain better.
Oh, I think you've done a wonderful job.
Well, perhaps.
Really, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope that you will feel that this is a good transcript when you see it.
I'm sure. Well, I wasn't sure of the direction that you were involved. I think this has wound up more about me.
No, it
hasn't. All right.
It hasn't really. There has to be. Let me just stop this.
Okay.
I'm going to stop this.
Yeah.
This is the end of the interview. Thank you, Mr. Simon.